Chapter 7. Leaving Terra. The near space of Terra was crawling with ship activity. Mechanicum scavenger barks swarmed a metal landscape wrought from steel and hung in orbit. The orbital plate still looked like a living world. Lights shone from domes and armor glass blisters. Peripheral signal beacons blinked. Spires shone with data sign. The carrion vessels said otherwise. Lemuria was dying. A conjurer's trick of a world, balanced on the knife edge, dividing Terra's gravity from the freedom of space, Lemuria was a marvel of science. Its renovation had been a statement of mankind's new ascendancy that shone brightly in the glare of Sol. Like a heliograph, it had winked the message of unity and prosperity at a hostile universe. Within its arcades and mega halls, were soft landscapes for a civilized people. The playgrounds of the rich had been a promise of what might come for all mankind's teeming billions once the war was done, and the galaxy under humanity's rightful stewardship. No more. After thousands of years, its end had come, and not at the hand of any enemy. Lord Dawn had declared the great civilian platforms a liability. Every one was in the process of being disassembled. Those in the highest orbits were towed away to be reassembled in the wake of victory, if victory ever came. The smallest were repositioned, converted to the purpose of war, and their populations pressed into service to man gun decks built over the parks and the palaces. The very largest could not be moved, and were too dangerous to be left in place. Lemuria, Rodiana, and the rest were torn from the sky. Prophylactic destruction to prevent the traitors hurling them down to break on the world below. Metal continents died, killed by their masters to save them from conquest. Lehman Russ's face reflected in the windows of the loading dock. Eyes of such a piercing blue, they should surely be able to bore their way through the armor glass, stared at the act of self-destruction unfolding in the skies below. The functional steelwork of the loading dock extended for kilometres either side of Russ. It possessed nothing so fancy as an observation deck. The window Russ watched from was one of only a handful that pierced the orbital side. It was small, stretching from the level of a man's waist to just over human head height, meaning the Primarch had to stoop to peer out. Grubby with accreted dust, cracked by orbital debris impact, the window was a lone weakness in a wall of adamant. Either side of the Primarch, long corridors of latticed plasteel led to cavernous hold spaces. From within, autoloaders rumbled without pause, the transfer of mass from dock to ships shaking the superstructure. Shadowy cubic shapes thundered back and forth across the way, relentless as pistons as they ferried munitions, water, food, guns, and all the rest of the endless materiel a fleet needed to wage war. Grills left the orbital's coiled innards open to view, a mess of cables crudely bound by steel bands, hissing pipes, junction boxes, winking lights, and ribbed metal organs crenellated like miniature castles. The grim cybernetic skull of the Machina Opus glared from every surface. It was an ugly place, brutish, utilitarian, made for the provisioning of battleships. But it would survive Dawn's clearing of the heavens. It had a military application. The glorious Skylands did not. There was no room for beauty or comfort on Terra anymore. Anything that did not serve the needs of war was swept away. Over Lemuria, the barks performed their positional dance, lining up with mechanical precision along the lateral and vertical lines of the plate, forming a cross that sectioned it into four quarters. Barrel-shaped tug craft puttered into position around Lemuria's periphery. Fire flashed as tow cannons spat tether harpoons, invisible even to the Wolf King's eyes at that far remove. Glittering storms of metal puffed out from the impact sites. Cables, hundreds of meters thick, gleamed like spider silk in the morning. From the barks came a coordinated twinkling. Halting metal steps trembled the companionway. The careful placing of a staff upon the plating's open plasteel grid tapped softly.
Jarl?
Kvar, said Russ without looking to see. Quiet now. I am thinking.
Lord Valdor has come to speak with you.
Has he now? He picks his moments, that one.
He is in haste, my king.
Well, he can wait, growled Russ. You kept me waiting long enough. Coming to me now, before I leave. Where was he 6 months ago? I want to see this. Russ looked back at his advisor and beckoned. Come look. Come see the killing of Upland. Kvar's distinctive footsteps came to the great wolf's side. The reflection of his face appeared next to Russ's. He wore no helm or mask, showing his wasted features as openly as he did his rune priest's fetishes.
My father wanted to bring the glories of the Oververse to everyone, said Russ. I am watching how that turned out.
The barks withdrew at speed, scattering in insect clouds.
Now see, Russ said.
A yellow cross of molten metal flared into life across the vastness of the plate in fusion-born crucifixion. Tug engines fired. With the patience of glaciers, they drew the sectioned plate apart. Flecks and fragments spun away from the divides, tumbling into Terra's gravity well, filling the atmosphere with campfire sparks. Anti-aircraft fire rose up to destroy the most dangerous.
I cannot disagree with this demolition, said the wolf quietly. Many times I have seen such artificial satellites plunge into the worlds they orbited. The impact upon the surface is more devastating than any bomb. It is the Oververse crashing down at the fall of the gods, the death of all things, the ending of times. I see this and know the dream is over. A dream of paradise torn from the sky.
It is not the Oververse, said Kvar. The afterlife cannot be remade in the here and now.
Russ gave Kvar a killing look, his lip curled over pointed teeth.
Don't be so bloody literal. It doesn't suit you. I am in a poetic mood, he who is divided, said Russ, his words grumbling in his chest as deep as any predator's growl. Permit me that before I leave my father's world forever.
The barks returned. Their prior organization seemed gone. They attacked the plate's quadrants in a feeding frenzy.
Musfeli feasting on a Horosvalur's wave-washed corpse bloat, said Russ, slipping into the Skiald's meter. Turn the sea road bloody and draw fella things to the flesh feast.
Worse monsters come already, said Kvar.
Russ and Kvar watched the barks shred Lemuria to pieces and carry off morsels of metal to feed to the Salvator arcs that commanded them. Such ships were the ravens of the Star Sea, harbingers of doom, battlefield scavengers of the void. They were many. They worked fast. But the plate was huge, wide as a moon. They were gnats attempting to drain the sea in sips.
This will take weeks, murmured Russ. They do not have enough time. Dawn fortified the system years ago. Why did he leave this until now?
It is something to do, said Kvar. Your brother needs occupation.
Russ shrugged.
Maybe.
All around Lemuria, the process was repeated as Terra's floating continents were torn down. Rodiana's outer rings had been broken off several days ago, the hub boosted to higher orbit for dissection. Gondwana had already been divided up and carted off. High Alba and Up Brasil bled pearls of light to the surface and back, lines of craft evacuating their populations while Mechanicum demolition crawlers scuttled over their surfaces, preparing them for dismantling. Piece by piece, Terra was stripped of her metal garments, leaving her aged body shivering nakedly in the coldness of space. Rumbling a thunderous growl, Russ tore himself away from the view of Terra's impoverishment.
Send Valdor in, then. Let us hear what he has to say for himself. I'll wager a holdfast's worth of miod he's come to warn me, too. People seem to enjoy that, warning me. Terra is a hall full of crones, washing their hands with their tears.
Kavar shrugged. There were many doors into the gallery. By the nearest stood Kavar's twin guardians, armoured in bone-white plate, covered in protective runes and wolf talismans. One squeezed his way through the door. Its dimensions suited menials bred to low gravity, not legionaries. Yet he moved with utmost stealth, and his plate touched not one part of the doorway. A moment later, Valdor emerged with difficulty, the golden plates of his armour clashing off the sides.
"My Lord Russ," said Valdor. "You don't look happy," said the Wolf King.
A touch of dangerous humour entered his eyes, the glitter of cold on a hellfrost blade.
"If I were honest, I would say I enjoy your discomfort. If you hadn't left us after Prospero, we might not have been boxed into that Skitna nebula."
Valdor joined the Primarch and glanced out of the window. His armour was pristine, scented with recently applied sanctifying oils, but his stolid face was pale, as if he had seen too little natural light, and his attempts to hide his tiredness were unsuccessful.
"If I were a more insolent man, I would have to ask why you have chosen this benighted spot to skulk in," Valdor said. "Skulk, is it?" said Russ. "If I were a more insolent man," said Valdor. "I'm here because I wanted to be left alone," said Russ affably. "I didn't do very well at that." "You've been asking to see me." "Then I was asking to see you when I was on Terra. Now I am leaving. What good does it do me to see you now?"
"I am sorry, my lord. The state of the war—"
"You can make up for it by telling me where you have been," said Russ, "and why my father is not speaking to me."
Valdor looked pained. Russ folded his arms. The amusement went from his eyes just like that, quicker than light from a doused lamp.
"Forgive the great wolf. He is of an ill humour today," murmured Kavar.
"I'll let my manners speak for me, Kavar."
Russ seemed to swell in size. He took no more space physically, yet at the same time he became huge in the minds of the men in the deserted corridor. His presence hung like a weight over them all, an executioner's axe suspended at the apex of its swing an instant from descent, or the hot wet snuffle of a bear at the cave mouth. He was fear. He was death behind a smiling face. It took more than courage to hold firm against such terror. Valdor at least had the grace to look uncomfortable.
"My lord, I cannot tell you. We have standing orders from the Emperor himself not to speak of what we do. Your father is occupied. Surely Malkador told you that."
"Aye. And I thought I might get a straighter answer from you than Malkador. At the best of times, his tongue is split. Dorne won't tell me either. And he does know."
Russ sniffed at Valdor.
"You've been fighting. Not much I can tell. All of you. I've not seen more than a dozen custodes in the palace together at any time since I got back. Where is the battle? You are exhausted."
"I cannot say, my lord," said Valdor. "I apologize."
"Then at least let me know if you are winning."
Valdor stared up at him in silence.
"Fine, then,"
Rush shrugged mightily.
"I do not care. We both go where the Emperor wills."
"And him? Is he what the Emperor wills?" asked Valdor.
"Are you talking about Kavar here?"
said Russ.
You know I am.
Valdor eyed Kavar's fetish-draped armour.
Are you calling me a hypocrite too, Valdor?
Russ loomed dangerously.
I've had enough of that from Dorne.
I would not live if I did, said Valdor. His stony face did not so much as twitch.
I am simply pointing out an inconsistency in your application of the Nicaean Edict. You were one of its most vocal supporters. Sorcery, I believe you called it. Can you not see that arrogance brought Horus down, and hubris, Magnus? You exhibit both, my lord.
Careful, rumbled Russ.
Kavar spoke up in his own defence.
Captain General, we are at war with the Emperor's favoured son. He has bolt guns. We have bolt guns. He has void ships. We have void ships. We have Titans and Cybernetica Legions, Fightercraft and Legiones Astartes. So does he. We have everything he has, and he has everything we have, apart from one weapon. A deadly weapon.
Kavar tapped Valdor's engraved nameplate with the head of his staff. Bone trinkets jangled.
Horus has magic. Real magic, drawn from the corrupt wellsprings of the Underverse. He has drunk deeply from black waters. Its powers flow through his veins. We have the Emperor, but he is occupied. You did say this, did you not?
Said Kavar.
He cannot be everywhere, as powerful and all-knowing as the Allfather is. Otherwise, why would he need his sons? Why would he need you?
Some would say you are a witch, said Valdor.
By that definition, so is Malkador. So is the Allfather. So are all those gifted men and women you use in this war against the foe. They are all witches. But you do not fear them. You use them. They are not the only ones to draw upon the powers of the Underverse without malice.
The Emperor vouchsafes the purity of their gifts. They are watched. You are not. Kavar laughed.
There is no purity in this power. All of it is touched by corruption. But a man's heart, or a world's, that can be pure. We rune priests know when to stop. Our gifts are formed from the ice and heat of Fenris's world forge. We know not to venture beyond these bounds.
So you know restraint, said Valdor. You know better than the Emperor.
I trust these men, said Russ. We are the executioners of the Emperor. Our ways of life and war are defined by knowing the limits and punishing those who exceed them.
You didn't bring your priests to the surface, pointed out Valdor.
The great wolf is headstrong some days, said Kavar, but he isn't a fool.
Russ grunted at Kavar in acknowledgement.
This conversation will go nowhere, Constantin. So tell me, have you come to drag me back down to the surface and denounce me in front of my father, wherever he is? Or are you going to let me get on with the business of killing my brother? It's high time someone did.
I want you to think, my lord, said Valdor.
Who says I don't, said Russ.
He leaned down so that he was eye to eye with Valdor and bared his pointed teeth in a feral grin.
I'm a thinker, me. I'm known for it.
Yes, you are, said Valdor without mockery. I have seen that fine mind of yours in action. Please remember, my lord, that Horus will not be fooled by your barbarian facade. Russ stood straight.
I don't expect him to be. Now, tell me what you're here for and get on your way. I'm busy.
Your father sends his regrets that he cannot be here, said Valdor. He wishes you well in your endeavour.
He sent you to tell me that?
Russ clapped his hands.
A vox blurt would have been as kind. It is well that I am an even-tempered fellow, or I might be insulted by this afterthought. Tell him, if he wants to be useful to me, he can say all that to Rogel. The man's as yellow as his son's armour with collar.
I assure you, you are foremost in your father's thoughts. You all are.
This isn't making it better, Valdor. Why are you really here?
I came to make sure you got this. By Vox, Valdor summoned a pair of menials. They pushed a grav sled, lined with purple velvet cushioning, awkwardly through the narrow door. Upon it was a long-hafted spear made for a Primarch. The Emperor's spear. You left it at Malkador's retreat. At the sight of the weapon, Russ sighed.
My thanks, he said.
He left it upon its cushion. Leaving it on Terra was his last test for it. This was weird in action. You are welcome, my lord. I shall leave you to your peace.
You mean my skulking? Said Russ.
If you wish. Valdor gestured to the menials that they should go. They bowed to the Primarch and left, the unease at the Lord of Winter and War evident in the speed of their departure. Valdor made to leave.
Valdor, said Russ.
My lord?
I have to do this. You understand? It is what I am. It is what I was made for.
Valdor bowed his head and departed.
He is right, Kavar, said Russ. They are all right. One day soon, we will have to examine our relationship with the warp.
He purposefully avoided the Uvic word underverse and used the Imperial term. Still, he spat upon the deck to ward away ill spirits.
Yes, my Jarl, said Kavar, but not today.
He paused.
I have word from the Hrafnikal. Loading is complete. The fleet is ready to leave. We wait upon your word.
Russ grunted. With the Captain General gone, he returned his attention to the silent play of destruction taking place over Terra.
The prelude to the symphony, Russ said.
Aye, said Kavar. The loudest music is yet to play.
As the warp storms calmed further, more ships came to Terra. Some came to lend their strength to a final defence. Many came, half expecting the throne world to have fallen and to find themselves in a battle for their lives. The celebrations they held when they discovered the situation was otherwise were muted, for the actual state of the galaxy was little better than the worst of their fears. All of them brought stories of terrible trips through the warp, of men lost to madness and ships clawed from the Empyrean by nightmarish horrors. Still they came. 10,000 ships crammed the higher orbits, hundreds of Collegia Titanica coffin ships and all their vessels of support waited at the uppermost anchors. Their numbers were exceeded by Imperial Army bulk carriers, many hurrying in from the Galactic West and those other parts of the Imperium that had been spared the worst of the fighting. Regiments from systems thousands of light-years from traitor atrocity waited alongside the battered remnants of routed forces. Every day saw dozens more vessels coming into Terra. If they expected refuge and peace, they were disappointed. At the behests of the Solar Marshals, they were ordered to make ready for war again. Legion ships of the 7th, 9th, and 5th resupplied in anticipation of the coming battle. They were given priority at the great docks around Terra, Jupiter, Saturn, and Luna. Bereft of Mars's industrial might, Terra struggled to meet their demands. The vessels and their armies were ordered to make sail for this battle or that holdfast, hoping for resupply en route. Most were ordered to beat Agamon. Though many times greater than the expedition fleets, the Beta Garmin Armada was a ragged memory of the indomitable Principia Imperialis that had cleansed the stars during the early stages of the Great Crusade. Only 2 centuries had passed since those days. Already they seemed unimaginably distant. If there was any comfort to be had, it came from the knowledge that the gathering at Terra was but a foretaste of the great muster Lord Dorne had planned at Beta Garmin. The generals and admirals focused their efforts on taking and reinforcing the contested system. Never mind that rumours of the War Master's victories had them doubting their chances of success. Never mind that, should Beta Garmin fall, the way to Terra would be open. There was no space for fear. Extinction was the only alternative to victory. The cessation of the ruin storm should have brought hope, but it fired a feverish preparation for the worst. Every man in the system, from the lowest menial to the Primarchs themselves, knew that the final days of the war were coming. Soon, the most terrible conflict mankind had ever fought would be won or lost. Through the shoaling press of ships around Terra, mighty predators sailed. Their steel-grey livery, adorned with snarling wolf's heads, their decoration was simultaneously intricate and primitive. The ships of the Space Wolves slunk obliquely away from the main marshalling nexuses. The capital ships, the Nidhogger, Fenrisava, and Rusvangum, were the core of the fleet, the alpha mothers and fathers of the pack. Around them sailed a few dozen lesser ships, ranging in size from grand cruisers to small, swift torpedo boats. Then there was the Hrafnekel, Lehman Russ's grand flagship. The others were the lords of the star packs. Hrafnekel was their god. Battered grey cliffs of plasteel slid past the other vessels with the stately presence of an iceberg afloat on Terra's prehistoric seas. Once the possessor of a whole lesser fleet's worth of firepower, the injured wolf had had many of its teeth pulled. Gaping holes marked every surface. Where its grey livery was not scarred black, it was pocked with damage not 100 years in dry dock could erase. Wounds that deep should have seen it retired from frontline duties. But it moved away from the safety of high anchor, its prow intent on ploughing fields of stars again. The Hrafnekel and its mates moved like wolves through herds gathering after a hard winter. They were battered by their experiences, but alive, their pack coherent and still dangerous despite their injuries. Astropathic messages radiated out from the throne world by the thousand. Broadcast spires, made silent by the ruin storm, sang again. So many went, uncertainly, flung out to worlds that may not exist anymore. No messages came for Lehman Russ as he withdrew his legion. 40,000 space wolves left the solar system. All that were left in all the Imperium. Prospero had been the grave of many. Alaxes took thousands to the grasp of Morkai's jaws. More had bled into the unforgiving earth of Vanaheim, or floated frozen in their battle suits amid the voidal wreckage zones of Davarant. The Sixth were a diminished force in every way. Even so, they remained potent enough to turn the tide of any battle. Dorne had made no secret that he would prefer that battle to be at Beta Garmon. The Praetorian's last orders to the wolf had turned to pleas. All went unanswered. Bypassing the Martian blockade, the fleet of the rout flew with all engines burning to the edge of the solar system and to the jump point there.